as Ben is going through and like pulling clips, like kind of just look for like you freaking out or like us saying something funny, and then like cut together like two or three things and just make that the cold open.
Can we just talk about me passionately talking about a topic rather than freaking out like a child? Dana White bullies Zuck into not being lame anymore. Also, Trudeau resigns. Big sad, everybody.
Woo.
So yeah, sad.
The vaccination.
Oh, I'm so
king.
Excited.
Trump's going to buy Greenland, apparently. And we're returning to the Cybertruck explosion story. It gets deeper, or maybe not.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Human Reaction, your weekly source for independent commentary on cultural news and politics, where it's always our mission to arm you with the tools and knowledge that you need to cut through media misdirection and resist the mononarrative. We're glad to have you. I am joined by David Rand, Kyle Mack, and Bennett on the buttons. My name is Joe Sheehan. Please like this episode right below the video. Follow, subscribe, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you would like to become a member, please go to humanreactionpod.com to find out how. There's lots of different ways on YouTube and on Substack. Also, we have a great Discord server. We would love to have you join us. That is free. We have awesome conversations, discuss all the week's news, and post amazing memes, Kyle.
And which I just pulled from, and I think three different people all posted the same meme. So yeah, it seemed very relevant to what's going on right now.
Pretty apt.
And it's relevant to our first story because we have Meta says that fact checkers were the problem, and fact checkers rule that as false. And we have the Spider-Man meme of them both just pointing at each other. Because what's happened now is that Dana White is joining Meta's board of directors.
That's just insane
to
me.
Which is crazy.
But I guess it makes sense. Zuck has been going to a lot of UFC events.
They're
and obviously
now.
He's trying to like get into that crowd, or he is in that crowd. I mean, I don't know to what degree he's like odd man out or whatever.
They have the same tailor.
He's less odd man out than Mike Johnson is.
They have the same tailor.
Tees.
Yeah, dude, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, they're great.
I mean, look at me.
So true classic.
Yeah, so Dana White tweeted out, "I love social media." That's a good way to start this. I love social media. Well,
and that sounds very Zuck, I will say.
It does sound kind of Zuck.
Not at all pandering.
And I'm excited to be a small part of the future of AI and emerging technologies at Meta. So he joins here. Also, he has Mark Zuckerberg has a whole statement saying that he's excited for having him. There's also other people who I've never heard of that are joining the board of directors. So, yeah. And I mean, Dana, for people that don't know, president and CEO of the UFC, and has built one of the craziest businesses ever through that, and like kind of a major phenomenon, and also kind of a right wing power center when it comes to the culture. Mm-hmm. Like that's where Trump goes walking in and is getting standing ovations every time. Right. It's kind of become a social hub and a networking spot for like right wing culture. It's much more leaning in that direction. And Zuckerberg has been somebody that's been going to those over and over again for the years, has gotten really into jujitsu, et cetera, which maybe suggests the shift, but there might be some more going on there too.
So I will revisit a question that I asked some time ago when Zuck said that he kind of considers himself a libertarian. Do you think this is an authentic shift towards based Zuck that we're seeing here? Or is this like image polishing and kind of trying to transition himself away from the left-wing tech culture he was previously a part of?
You know, Mark Andreessen's on the Facebook board and has been for a very long time. And he claims that when they decided to start cracking down on hate speech, that he spoke up, was the only one on the board to speak up and say, no, Peter Thiel too.
Peter Thiel was.
Peter Thiel spoke up and said, this is a bad
idea. I was going to use the same story.
Yeah.
You stole my story,
oh,
Dave.
Sorry, buddy.
Just use the wrong
and,
person.
And the rest of the board wanted to kick him off. And Mark Zuckerberg was the one who said, no, we need dissenting voices on the board. Additionally, that the endorsement of Trump and all the other kind of controversies that Peter Thiel faced back in 2016 at this kind of pivot point, there was, you know, a lot of pressure for Meta to do the cancel culture thing and kick someone off for endorsing Trump. And Zuck said no. So like this is a pivot in new direction, especially with being less censorious and these other things, but also kind of a continuation, maybe who he was, and maybe people put him into the camp of evil dictator, bad guy, unjustly.
Well, it's also just, I think people look at CEOs of these massively publicly traded company and give them way more power in their minds than they actually have. It's like, you got the board of directors, you got a lot of these different like agencies within the company itself. It's not just the CEO can come in and just do all this stuff, especially when they're looking at shareholders and they're supposed to be able to, they're supposed to be creating shareholder value. And especially you have this ESG thing looming over everybody. And it's just like, well, you need to get your social credit score up. You need to do this. You need to do that. And the CEOs are feeling beholden to those types of metrics because that's what makes BlackRock want to invest in your thing, is if you are, you know, beholden to this social credit system that has been devised. And now that's all broken down, and now everybody kind of feels more free to back away from it all.
And another one we were pointed out a little while ago was Mike Benz's theory that, you know, the advertiser boycott on Facebook was so profound, you know, to create the censorship incentive, that the only reason that Elon Musk was able to resist it is he's a 100 billionaire and Zuck is only a tens of billionaire. And that's the scale of what we're talking
Two
about.
Two digits versus three digits make a big difference.
It would for me. So yeah, those sorts of phenomena is maybe cast Zuck into like, he's just an agent of the globalist kind of way of looking at it, as opposed to he's a person responding to incentives and a system of trade-offs. And now, obviously, the trade-offs and incentives are going the opposite way, and he's now kind of going that way. So it's kind of like the general cultural, echoing what you're saying, general cultural shift as embodied in this particular decision.
Well, and part of the Mike Benz thesis, too, is back in 2019, Facebook faced massive boycotts, similar to how Elon Musk faced boycotts after the acquisition of Twitter, where it was like the ADL was coming after Zuckerberg. It was like, oh my God, there's anti-Semitic hate speech going on. And this is back in 2019. This is pre-COVID. And then Facebook lost $60 billion worth of value in that moment because of those boycotts. And then everybody looks at, well, the Zuckerberg Chan Foundation gave $400 million in the election stuff that was going on in 2020. And just like, okay, $60 billion or $400 million. There's a, you know, That almost feels like he's trying to appease the system in some ways in that moment. But then there's also like, it's his wife and the foundation. There's that Peter Thiel thesis that exists there too.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I was just looking up a little bit on the other two board members that were appointed, John Elkman, Elkin and Charlie Songers. John Elkin is European. He's the CEO of Exor and also led companies like Ferrari and Stellantis. So he's like a car guy and a European as well, which could have some relevance to the whole conversation we had around censorship and the European Digital Services Act and all that stuff, maybe trying to get in front of some of those legislative pieces and get better insight into that market.
Well-known CEO in the area, probably in the region, probably.
Yes, yeah, for sure. And then Charlie Songhurst is served at Microsoft in strategic roles, has a strong background in tech and AI. So obviously trying to kind of guide maybe the AI strategy a little bit with that.
Well, the whole reason for Meta becoming Meta, like it used to be called Facebook as an organization and then it became Meta, was because Zuck really wants to do the virtual reality stuff. Like that's his big area that he really wants to develop. And, you know, we got like the Quest and all these virtual reality devices. And that seems to be where his real passion lies at this current state in time. So that's also there too.
Yeah.
There's also like, just think about it. You got a car guy and a UFC guy coming into the sport. I bet it like doubles the T levels right there.
Oh, for sure.
Well, and just like, look at this, because I got a video here. Zuckerberg put out a message. We'll just do a little bit of it. We won't do the full 5 minutes here, but you can kind of get the vibe. But look at how much he's changed lately. He's so Gen Z now. Like his whole style, his hair, he's got the classic Gen Z haircut that I...
He doesn't quite though. If he wanted the classic Gen Z haircut, he'd have to shave the side so it was a true broccoli. This is sort of just more of like a cabbage patch.
Yeah, but the cabbage patch is big Gen Z. Like I know some Gen Z kids with the cabbage patch.
That's fair.
Yeah, but here's just kind of like we'll go through all of the details after, but just you can get a little bit of a vibe of what this looked like.
I want to talk about something important today because it's time to get back to our roots around free expression on Facebook and Instagram. I started building social media to give people a voice. I gave a speech at Georgetown 5 years ago about the importance of protecting free expression. And I still believe this today. But a lot has happened over the last several years. There's been widespread debate about potential harms from online content. Governments and legacy media have pushed to censor more and more. A lot of this is clearly political.
I like how he says legacy.
But there's also
media.
A lot of legitimately bad stuff
He's
out there.
He's using a lot of the
drugs, terrorism, child exploitation. These are things that we take very seriously, and I want to make sure that we handle responsibly. So we built a lot of complex systems to moderate content. But the problem with complex systems is they make mistakes. Even if they accidentally censor just 1% of posts, That's millions of people. And we've reached a point where it's just too many mistakes and too much censorship. The recent elections also feel like a cultural tipping point towards once again prioritizing speech. So we're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms.
Pause it there. But he then goes on to say that they're ending third-party fact-checking and replacing it with community notes like X. So they're just kind of dismantling entire agencies within the organization and the third parties that exist there, which is where that meme comes in.
Right? And I will add, from a business perspective, cutting a ton of overhead in terms of jobs and replacing it with user-generated feedback.
Yeah.
So,
but and also moving a bunch of the team and for like the trust and safety side to Texas so that they get more diverse opinions.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is interesting.
Because he said that there was concern over bias amongst the, the employee pool in California. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe.
They're removing the reduction of political content because a couple years ago, they put on basically you get downgraded in the algorithm if you're talking about civil content. Like, that's actually the word that he uses, is civil content in the video. They're lifting all sorts of topic restrictions throughout that because all of these things, everybody, like, remember when we first started this podcast, Instagram was our best platform.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, it was like dead. Nothing. It was just dead instantly. It was like, that's when they put in the civil restrictions.
Right? I see. So maybe we'll be good on Instagram.
Yeah, maybe it'll start popping off again. There's also, moving the content moderation to Texas, working with Trump to end censorship globally, he talks about, which that goes into the European Digital Services Act. Like, there's going to be probably a lot of pressure coming from Republican-owned State Department now to put pressure on the censorship practices that are going on in the EU right now.
For sure.
Which could be very positive. And reflecting the will of the American voters who want freedom and less censorship.
Well, good.
It is interesting that he mentions the election so overtly. Like, the elections happen now, and now we're going to change.
Well, you really didn't want to go to jail for the
Well, remember, it was on Rogan with Zuckerberg where kind of having one of these guys being like talking about the FBI coming directly to them. Yeah. Like, Zuckerberg on Rogan was the one that broke that.
Twitter files,
that was before
right?
the Twitter files. And it was like the first time any of these guys had ever mentioned that. It was always like people like us would be speculating about that. And maybe there's some stuff going on there. And we would always be like, there's probably a lot of stuff going on there. But it was Zuckerberg himself saying that on Rogan, which kind of started the storm. Yeah. And was probably a major factor in eventually Elon buying Twitter. Too.
But what about the fact checkers?
Yeah.
What about them? Who's looking out for the fact checkers?
They can go back to blogging. It'll be fine.
Go fuck yourself.
Well, so we have Wired right now saying that Meta's fact checking partners say they were blindsided by the decision to axe them. Fact checkers claim they had no idea the company was going to end their partnerships and are scrambling to figure out the financial implications of the move.
Polish up those resumes, kids.
Learn to code.
Learn to code.
How many H-1Bs do you think are going to be taking their jobs doing community notes?
Yeah. I'll be one of them.
Well, no, I think the H-1Bs are probably the people that are actually like designing actual products for the company.
They're the ones that'll learn the
No,
code.
These are the FBI goons.
Right. Well, they can just go back to the service, right?
Yeah, they'll be going back to Langley. No problem.
They're going to start going back into the office 5 days a week.
Speaking of getting fired... Good old Justin Trudeau.
Well, I was going to go to Greenland first, but we can shift to Trudeau.
Next. He's next.
No, he's not.
Oh,
well, kind of.
The title
you guys,
didn't get moved.
Yeah, you guys changed my titling. Yeah,
I didn't change anything.
That was too funny.
We'll go to Canada first. We can do that.
It's closer.
It is closer.
So yeah, Trudeau, who, and last time we talked about it was on our speculation for the year, and I was like, he's going out. There's no way. And mostly based upon, and Kyle had like stats and figures, so I was like, no, it's just the videos of people going up like, hello, Mr. Trudeau, and he's like, oh, hi, how you doing? And there's like, screw you and everything you stand for, leave the country, please. And
go f- yourself.
Just the look of dejection on his face.
He's like, oh.
Delicious.
So I actually, and I'll go into, I did a bunch of digging into what my homeland, how their election processes look like, and I'll give some details on that. But first, let's just give this the clip of his resignation speech that he gave a couple days ago here.
Over the holidays,
I've also had a chance to reflect and have had long talks with my family about our future. Throughout the course of my career, any success I have personally achieved has been because of their support and with their encouragement. So last night over dinner,
Castro Jr.'s out.
I told my kids about the decision that I'm sharing with you today. I intend to resign.
Cry, bitch.
As party leader, as prime minister.
You should put the Castro joke in the intro.
After the party selects its next leader through a robust nationwide competitive process. Over the
So he resigned.
Can we have a moment of silence? I'm distraught over this news. just a brief moment.
Just sad.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
All right. What were we going to say, Kyle?
Actually, before we go into that, it's also worth noting because there's been some dialogue that has formed as of today, more so because there's been this jokes going around from Trump, right? Where he's talking about many people in Canada love being the 51st state. The United States can no longer suffer under these massive trade deficits and subsidies that Canada needs to stay afloat. Justin Trudeau knew this and resigned. If Canada merged with the U.S., there would be no tariffs, taxes would go way down, and they would be totally secure from the threat of the Russian and Chinese ships that are constantly surrounding them. Together, what a great nation it would be. So there's been a lot of these jokes going around and this meme-y stuff happening.
Dude, that's so delicious that he memed him into retirement, resignation, and then memed him on the way out. Like, just beautiful work. Oh, God, it's just vicious.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's really good.
But I want to add, and this is you guys adjust my notes, but there's a reason why I wanted to have this after the Greenland stuff, because after Trump was talked about Greenland here, he was asked about Canada at his press conference this morning in Mar-a-Lago. And he had said about Greenland and Panama, where he was asked, would you put economic and military force involved in that? And Trump was like, I'm not going to say no to it. Then he was asked later, well, what about Canada?
He's like, War of 1812, part two.
So here's his response. So here's Trump's response.
If we were to work under the assumption that you're serious about making Canada the 51st state of the United States, the leader of the Conservative Party in Canada said, under no circumstances, will ever be the 51st state.
Maybe he won't win, but maybe he will. I don't care.
You had suggested
that. Listen, I don't care what he says.
But Sir Lopez, you're considering military force to acquire Panama and Greenland. Are you also considering military force to annex and acquire Canada?
No. Economic force. Because Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line, and you take a look at what that looks like, and it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada. But here's the problem with Canada. So many friends up there.
Don't get me started.
I love the Canadian people. They're great.
They love me.
But we're spending hundreds of billions a year to protect it.
I just had a thought here, guys. What if Canada becomes a state? What are all the angry liberals who moved to Canada out of protest going to do?
Well,
where will they go?
Well, here's where. Well, I kind of want to set the vision of where Canada's going now, because they're not going to want to move to Canada because Canada's drastically changing this year anyways. So here's some of the details of how elections work in Canada. Because we have, so Justin Trudeau is resigning. That doesn't necessarily mean that the election is right now. So he has asked Parliament to suspend until March 24th, while the Liberal Party has their own election in order to elect the new leader who would be the prime minister. Because it's the party that controls it. So the new Liberal, like, leader would become the prime minister
until there's an election
on March 24th. Yeah. But the election is set to be in October 20th,
the general election.
Yeah. The actual election. So this new person coming in would be the new prime minister until that election comes in.
Gotcha. And if his poll numbers are so devastatingly low that he's dragging down the rest of his party, this is what he has to do in order to set up someone, a new brand to take over. So they have any shot at all. Think of this as like Biden pulling out just all over again.
Yeah.
Well, and also the opposition parties.
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
The opposition parties.
Come on, I had a joke over that.
You stole it.
This is my only time to shine.
This is how I get my fame. The opposition parties may be pushing for a non-confidence vote when Parliament reconvenes. That would push for an earlier election because Canada has this weird thing where there's like a set date for the election, but depending on the politics, and this is usually under the Prime Minister's discretion, they can use their discretion to reset the date of the election anytime before the set date. So if this non-confidence vote goes through, then we might just be seeing a new election in coming months rather than October.
Wow.
Right?
That would be wild.
Yeah. Because right now in Canada, there's kind of six major parties. There's four major parties, but then there's like, they have like their Green Party and their People's Party too. So you have the Conservative Party.
Do they have a Libertarian Party?
That would be kind of like the People's Party,
okay,
which I want to get into a little bit of that too, because there's some interesting dynamics that exist there. This Maxime Bernier guy, he's made quite a bit of fuss in recent years. Like he's been on Jordan Peterson. He's been on Vivek's podcast. Like he's kind of... They kind of have the same role that the libertarians have, where they're kind of like more on the right wing side, and they kind of do this like this kind of
spoiler game.
Kyle hates them.
No, Kyle totally hates them. I like them better than the Libertarian Party, to be frank.
It's just the Montreal libertarians that he doesn't like.
But
nobody likes them.
But so you have the Conservative Party of Canada, who by all metrics is going to be the next leadership of Canada by a wide margin. Like we're talking gaining 100 seats wide margin when there's like 325 seats, right?
Wow.
It's like massive.
30% shift to the right.
It's mass. Like I'll get into the number breakdown after, but I'll just kind of give the parties. Their leadership is by a guy by the name of Pierre Poilievre, and he's kind of the being framed on Twitter as the Trump of the party or the Trump of Canada.
Yeah.
Is he actually... The Conservative Party of Canada is kind of like the Republicans of Canada. Like... they're more moderate in a sense.
His memes aren't nearly as fiery.
He did put out this tweet today in response to this Trump press conference where Canada will never be the 51st state, period. Goes in through all this stuff. I will fight for Canada. When I am prime minister, we will rebuild our military and take back control of the border, secure both Canada and the U.S. We will take back control of our Arctic to keep... So there's that Arctic discussion, which goes into the Greenland discussion too, right?
I see.
And
are the commies invading through the Arctic?
Well, there's...
What is this, a James Bond movie?
I want to get into that on the Greenland stuff. So in other words, we'll put Canada first. Right. So it's the Canada First movement.
MICA.
Then you have the Liberal Party of Canada, which is Trudeau's party. Think of them like the neoliberals. Like they're kind of like the Hillary Clintons of Canada.
Boom. Sounds right.
Globalists. They're the Democrats. Then you have the New Democratic Party. And this is kind of like if Bernie Sanders had a party or AOC had a party. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like that. And they're... this shows how liberal Canada is that they have like two major parties that both have a lot of power. That are basically like left and a little bit more left. Yeah. Then you have Bloc Québécois, which is just the Québécois, like the Quebec interest party, and they have major power.
Huh.
Like that's like their fourth major party is just
the French
we one. Just believe in Quebec.
Yeah.
Like, so they're like Texas.
Yeah, we will extract all the resources from Canada in every vote that we can possible in Parliament, and we will just move that all to Quebec, and we're speaking French. Damn it. Like, it's like then you have the Green Party and then you have the People's Party, right? So the breakdown of this is total seats 338. This is what current polling suggests. Out of 338 seats, the Conservatives are going to have 240 to 250 of those seats.
Wow. That is monstrous.
That's like a 120 seat swing currently.
Holy moly.
Then the Liberal Party of Canada is going to go to 6 to 38 seats.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
Which is Trudeau's party?
That's Trudeau's party.
What?
Yeah.
That seems a little crazy to me. That's just some initial stuff that I was getting pulled from when I was just like asking Grok and doing some basic research. I do have a map that suggests it might be more like 70 seats, but still.
Yeah. It's
like,
still a crushing defeat.
Oh, man.
Yeah. annoyingly, the conservatives, like, so I just pulled up the map. Conservatives are blue in Canada.
So the this American is like, ah!
and the Liberal Party is red.
Of course. This is reason number one why they need to become a state, just so we can get the colors right.
Using the wrong colors.
But if you look at this,
that you could tell.
See the difference between red and blue most of the time.
I'm sorry.
But it's really maroon.
But
or
if you look at, if you look at this map right here, look at the blue. This is the Conservative Party. Mm. The entire west of Canada, all of British Columbia, all of Alberta, almost all of Saskatchewan. That's just one big province because that's just like where the first people live and nobody lives up there. Like mm-hmm. it's just first people is the Native American slang yeah. in Canada,
mm-hmm.
right? That's just one big section, like one big district yeah. in Saskatchewan. Then all the rest of Saskatchewan going conservative.
Yeah, but they're crushing it in Ontario. That's the yeah. surprising one, right? Ontario and Montreal.
Yeah, and even, this other Quebec? This other light blue block, that's yeah. the Quebecois block, right?
Makes
so,
sense.
So this is, red is Liberal Party, and this like orangish color is the New Democrat Party, right?
Wow, they're getting smashed.
Just completely crushed in
wow.
the poll.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So they only control like the least populous provinces or districts.
That's what it's looking like.
Wow.
It, like and that, that's, and some, that's the and
some,
territories.
In some urban areas. You get those small red districts right there in Ontario.
Yeah, yeah like and then but, like the city districts, right? Yeah,
but
yeah,
still that's
Toronto.
That's cool a, that's the crazy. Most base is right above us though.
Yeah.
Well yeah, and that's my family. Like I'm
way
Saskatchewan,
to go South
right?
Central Canada.
Like my family is all Saskatchewan, so like they're the super based.
I love it. I
Very
love
cool.
to see it.
Yeah. So that's kind of where Canada is like sitting at this current point in time. It's probably, I mean, a lot of people are looking at it like this is going to be a move towards like super MAGA. Maybe. I mean, the Conservative Party in Canada, they're much more, I don't know if they're that based. This is probably just a move to like Canada 15 years ago, which was pretty good. Like Canada was on par with the dollar. They were like one Canadian dollar equaled one United States dollar back then. Now it's like 70 to a dollar. Like,
yeah, that graph crazy. Is amazing. I'm sure you guys have seen it circulating around X where it shows when Trudeau became prime minister, like the Canadian economy just they were basically on track together with the U.S. economy and then yep. it just parted and Canada just tanked.
Yeah, as soon as Stephen Harper was out, Trudeau was in. And this is probably a return to Stephen Harper. Pierre Poilievre, he worked for Stephen Harper. He was in his administration
gotcha.
As like a young guy back then.
I got to say, just on his part, I saw a clip of him explaining inflation to a bunch of like blue collar workers somewhere doing kind of a campaign stop. And it was probably the best explanation I've heard of the real cause of inflation from any politician ever. Mm. Like maybe other than Milley. I mean, I think he could do it, but he spelled it out so simply, you know, using very, very plain terms and pinned the blame squarely on money printing, which is like not something you often hear from a politician.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. It's like it's, and we'll see, like will Canada become a 51st state? I don't think so, but I would not be surprised if like 2026, there's some new formal alliance agreement or something that starts to move. Like it'll probably be, Pierre is going to do this. Like we will never be like Canada strong, Canada first. Like he's going to do that thing for a long time. And then he's going to get elected and then he'll have a meeting with Trump. And then they're going to devise some formal agreement. That's probably some sort of
free trade-ish deal.
Yeah. I suspect we're probably going to see something like that moving forward in the coming years.
Yeah.
First, we have to get through this year, and then we'd end up seeing that.
Or maybe it'll happen sooner if the no confidence vote thing happens.
That's true. Yeah.
Could happen.
And one thing that I look at when I look at this map is the Conservatives have no reason to become a 51st state, if only because all of their forestry, which is not a small part of their economy, is in the conservative areas, and that forestry would be devastated by being controlled by the EPA and American federal government policy.
It's also oil land.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that's one. Oil and coal. And that's been one of the big drives, especially in Alberta. I believe the premier in Alberta was like requested or something to, I can't remember. My Canadian family was telling me about this like a year or two ago. The premier in Alberta, which is like their governor, mm-hmm. Was like requested of Facebook by Trudeau to be removed. Like there's like that type of stuff that was going on where like Trudeau, like, yeah, like Trudeau and like Liberal Party leadership were like actively requesting social media companies to remove the premier in Alberta and stuff. I can't remember all the story. I might be having that wrong,
well,
but it was like,
I'm trying to remember, but Alberta was pretty based during the COVID era. Which
they're the most based.
Could have been around that time. In fact, I think I remember some controversy around that.
Yeah.
In those years.
Yeah. They were because it was way crazier in Canada than it was America during that time. Like, I knew and had heard stories from people talking about like Christmas parties where people were like hiding their cars out in forests to go to Christmas parties because cops would be coming by and knocking on people's doors if they saw like more than one car in front of a house. Like, that type of stuff was going on. There was like famous images or famous videos of like people like priests getting pulled out of churches, pastors getting pulled out of churches. Oh, yeah. That type of
like,
stuff was going
much
on.
Like the trucker protests.
Trucker protests
that happened with that, you know, and like just the mainstreaming of Canadian politics because of a trucker protest around vaccine requirements. That's huge. I mean, like, it's not often that Canadian politics becomes an international story.
Yeah.
Quite like that did. I wonder to what degree that's like this is a reflection of that. Like, it happened on the ground. Only a small amount of people knew it, but it went so viral online, it gets echoed back to the rest of Canada about what these people are facing and all the oppression. And I don't know why it takes 4-5 years for that to change, but it seems like
it is. And that was the big thing was Trudeau called his own election, because I explained that's how Canada works, where Trudeau called his own election while he was still super popular in the early days of COVID. Mm. And then all of a sudden he just went tyrannical as soon as he won his election. Mm. And like, this was when everybody in America was like, I'm not taking a Trump vaccine, you know, and then everybody's flipped after that happened. Right?
Right.
Like, this is during that time period too. So, and it's also the inspiring nature of that. Like, that's where RFK went to the Bitcoin conference and said that this is why the Canadian trucker protest is what made him start looking into Bitcoin and made him much more libertarian as a whole is because of the Canadian truckers.
Interesting.
Right. Like that, like a lot of these leaders that we're seeing kind of, who have left the Democrats and stuff, it was things like that swayed them and being like, I got to start figuring like something in my worldview is wrong right now because this Canadian trucker stuff is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Wild stuff.
So while we're on the Arctic, Trump is going to buy Greenland, apparently.
Allegedly.
And although it but sounded... he's going to use tariffs to do so.
Tariffs just solve everything.
What does he mean by economically?
He's going to.
That was Canada, wasn't it?
Well, so
in the clip,
let me pull a clip from the same press conference, where he's asked a similar question about Greenland, right? Because if people don't know, Denmark currently owns Greenland,
right?
Right, and that's been the case. I looked into the history of this a little bit. So Norway used to own Greenland back in like 1200.
Nice.
And then they kind of just left it. Norway and Denmark came together, you know, Vikings and stuff like that. And Denmark just kind of like absorbed it. And then they just kind of had it and nobody used it until the 1800s when they're just like, I guess we have Greenland.
Yeah.
And they formalized it.
After the Napoleonic Wars, there was a formal treaty called the Treaty of Kiel, where they then said, this is a property of Denmark. Now, they've had home rule since 1979.
Yeah.
And since 2009, they've had a self-governing act, which gave them more local authority. Basically, Denmark subsidizes Greenland with like block grants, the way that our federal government subsidizes states, and protects it, whatever that means.
And Trump in this press conference is kind of like, we don't even really know if legally Denmark has a right to Greenland. That's the type of stuff he's saying.
Right? We're looking into it.
We're looking into it. But here is him being asked about that, the use of economic or military force on Greenland.
To Greenland and the Panama Canal, so forth. Can you assure the world that as you try to get control of these areas, you are not going to use military or economic coercion?
No.
And can you tell us a little bit about what your plan is? Are you going to negotiate a new treaty? Are you going to ask the Canadians to hold a vote? What is the strategy?
Yeah, I can't assure you. You're talking about Panama and Greenland. No, I can't assure you on either of those two. But I can say this. We need them for economic security. The Panama Canal was built for our military. I'm not going to commit to that now. It might be that. Okay.
And then I have one more, you guys. You say what you want, but
hell yeah, brother.
I think Bennett just said it. I mean, how do you take that, David? Is that just good politics to not paint himself into a corner this early, or is he really considering this stuff?
As usual, I have no idea what Trump's fucking talking about. I think it's hilarious, but I don't know what he's talking about.
Is more continued on this conversation.
Yeah.
Well, we need Greenland for national security purposes. I've been told that for a long time, long before I even ran. I mean, people have been talking about it for a long time.
You did have that famous.
You have approximately 45,000 people there. People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world. You look at, you don't even need binoculars. You look outside, you have China ships all over the place. Binoculars. You have Russian ships all over the place. We're not letting that happen. We're not letting it happen. And if Denmark wants to get to a conclusion, but nobody knows if they even have any right title or interest. The people are going to probably vote for independence or to come into the United States. But if they did do that, then I would tariff Denmark at a very high level.
Have you asked your staff to draw plans for
action? So put the pressure on Denmark.
Wild.
Try to get some, Greenlanders voting to separate and all this stuff going and absorb them.
You think he's going to leverage the censorship industrial complex to stir up some, some whole
Greenland
society.
Rising? The Greenland uprising?
Grexit? the other one? Anyway.
A Greenland spring?
Do they have that there? Or is it just always covered in ice? Sorry.
Arab spring, Greenland spring.
I know. Yeah.
Just, a Nordic spring? I don't know. What do you want me to call it?
Okay, was he referring to Chinese warships? Like just patrolling the Atlantic?
International waters. Which is what everyone does. Those are just the most vague, there's threats out there type of thing. I don't really know what that means.
He's just flexing.
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't really understand the geostrategic value of Greenland.
Well, here it is.
Okay, but what?
This must be a view from the top.
Nobody looks at the map from the top. They only look at it from the side. Right?
So why is this valuable, Kyle?
Because Russia is here and Greenland is here.
Why is Russia important, Kyle?
Because Russia is there. look at how much they own.
Yeah, I mean, what if we have to bomb Finland? How are we going to do that if we don't have a base? We have intercontinental ballistic missiles. We have bases all across NATO. All across, in missiles and all that shit. We got rid of the START treaty.
But this is the thing. In the geopolitics of defense versus defense and MAD and all this stuff, it's much easier. This is where you shoot. You're shooting this direction.
You're not shooting at the middle of Russia. You're shooting at the European side of Russia.
That would be here, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Here. That's where our bases and submarines do.
Yeah.
Why do we need Greenland?
I don't know. If you just drew a line across, you basically have you own the entire left side.
Yeah, you take Canada and you take Greenland and you got
it. Just look at this and be like, I want more.
Pretty much.
It's just like, I want half. Well, I don't know. Let's just take Iceland while we're at it. Why?
Dude, he's trying to ensure his legacy. He wants a Louisiana Purchase moment. I think that's what this is.
I'm down with a Louisiana Purchase moment. I'm down to buy Canada.
Two more Democratic senators. You know that, right?
Greenland?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Their average right winger is a Democrat in the United States, guys.
Not if Trump just bombs the shit out of them.
I have just in Scandinavia. Not if you depopulate it.
We're going to depopulate
Greenland. How do you explain? Look at this massive crowd at a rally in Greenland for Don Jr.
Are they more based than we think?
Look at all those MAGA hats, man.
There's five people.
They're all 97. By the time this happens, they won't even be around.
These are the Republican expats.
Well, but you gotta bear in mind, there's 60,000 people there. So that's a big portion of the population. That's the size of Bozeman.
But seriously.
Oh, well, we should pull up an electoral map.
Well, so here, I'll just play this video here because I find it kind of funny. So Don Jr. and Charlie Kirk and a bunch of these other guys went to Greenland. They just landed yesterday or something. And so there's they're going to all these different meetups in different Greenland cities, and they're meeting with Greenland mayors and officials and things like that. And they're kind of just getting the vibes.
There's more than one.
Yeah. But so Trump has been calling in to Don Jr. to these meetings and he's just been putting Trump on speakerphone for those meetings. So here's what this looks like.
What happened to Trump? He's a real hunter, fisherman, all the things that you love.
and I said it'd be great to go up there with his two very talented friends and the other group, a lot of other people. So I just want to say that it's a very special place.
Because it's poor audio, you kind of get the vibe. You have all these like MAGA hats going on, and he's just like, Greenland's a special place. Greenland's great. I love Greenland. Don Jr.'s been telling me great things about his travel there.
Jeez. Okay, I have a question about the whole Greenland thing. Like, why is this a thing? Like, why is this in the news? Why has this been raised as like a talking point? What's the relevance of
it? When Kyle was talking about it on his bingo card, I had no idea why.
And you guys convinced me to take it off my bingo card. And this seems to be the most likely.
Well, because I had no idea what the fuck was going on with Greenland.
Exactly. And I'm not even...
I think it's the geopolitical significance. It's like you have another area for defense. And closer to Russia in the Arctic Circle. State.
You could just put in a base with a base agreement, just like we do all over the place.
Don't we already have one? We have a bunch.
In Greenland?
Yeah.
But there's also the natural resources element of it and that type of stuff too.
Let's put the EPA in charge of it. That'll
There's uranium there, there's gold there, there's a bunch of stuff. Like it's more than like it's multifaceted as a decision making. Like whether you agree with it or not, like the strategic importance is relevant.
Lindsey
right?
Graham should
militarily I don't understand, Kyle. I still don't understand. But if you're saying if it's for mercantilism, I'm like, oh okay, I could see that.
Mercantilism and the military side. I don't see
once
why
again,
that's
the military side is completely not doesn't make any sense anymore.
Navy ports and things like that? Like
we already have ports there, number one. Number two, we have
but more secured. Like
submarines
it's more under
in
it's
the
more
water un- that shoot the nukes.
But
we have
but it's more under our like sway. Because right now it's just like these agreements with Denmark and things like that, right? Like now it's
we already
it'd be
pay
more
for
under
all their defense.
Like, yeah, but like if they're actually under our control as a territory, we have way more power and control over them.
Sure,
like
but
that's the thing, right?
That's the thing that's just it seems like a lot for a very little of difference for us because if you introduce them as a state, you got one new Democrat representative.
I think he's talking about making
senators.
Them a state. I don't think that's what's part of the discussion.
Okay, right. So what are we doing then? Are we making
it's
them
more
a territory?
Like Puerto Rico. Right? Like it's probably more like protector.
Well, if he wants them as a protector, that has, you know, once again, they're just going to get representative for the extra representatives that are then represented.
On some committee that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
right.
I'm not about empire expansion, number one. Number two, if the way you do that is by a free trade agreement to extract resources and minerals, I would much rather see that. Versus an actual expansion of the invisible empire.
That's fair. Do you think he's
going to
do
it? Because the empire has costs.
Do you think he's going to do it?
What's that?
Do you think he's going to do it?
I don't know. I don't know. It depends on whether it works for Denmark, right? Whether or not Denmark wants to give it up. Because if he tariffs Denmark, they have an export market. U.S. exports to Denmark are about $12 billion. Our imports are $13 billion. So we have pretty close to trade parity with them. Once you see that, you see pharmaceutical prices increase. That's going to be a problem because they're a major pharmaceutical exporter. And then, Denmark
is
part of the EU.
Is this happening?
I don't know.
Or is that Netherlands? It's one of those.
I don't know.
I think it might be Denmark. Maybe
yeah, and all your chicks are going to get fat again, guys. What the hell? This is the America
what
we want.
What the fuck?
and then Denmark is part of the EU, who has almost a $700 billion trade relationship in the United States. If you tariff Denmark, all of the EU will then raise tariffs. So the whole plan doesn't make a lot of sense to me either.
This is deal negotiation, though. Like this is a lot of this is boisterous deal negotiation.
Yeah,
right? Like this is the art of the deal.
Yeah,
right?
But once again, the threat only works until someone calls you on it, and if they call him on it over something idiotic, that's when the whole thing breaks, and now all of a sudden everyone goes like, oh, it's all just a threat, it's all just boisterous, it's not real.
So I
think there's more weight behind the threat, because like there's a lot happening like with the current realignment that's happening across the West right now. There's an influence game that is at play here, right? And I think going against America, even if you're just part of the EU or whatever, in this current mode right now, is probably a dangerous game. Like, I think that just the influence factor that Trump has in this moment is probably enough to get a lot of things moving.
That's like, certainly fair. I mean, and if you think it's
part of the deal,
if you think it's a deal that he's trying to strike, is Greenland actually the object of the deal, or is it a bargaining chip to angle for something else? Similar to the way that, say, you know, Ukraine would try to take more territory from Russia so that when they make a peace deal, they can give less back.
Maybe.
You know, like...
I don't know what that would be if it was
right.
That.
I guess that's a big question. To your question, David, about the
Iceland
strategic,
next, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think the national security piece is explained a little bit by this. I just asked Rock, why would Trump want to buy Greenland? And from the strategic importances, it cites its geopolitical position.
Strategery.
Greenland is strategically located between North America and Europe, making it an important point for control over the Arctic region. So it seems like this is over the Arctic for whatever reason. Nobody really pays any attention to the Arctic.
Where the UAPs are coming from?
Maybe. This position is vital for security, especially in terms of military bases and surveillance capabilities like those at Pituffik Space Base, formerly Thule Air Base, which is the northernmost outpost of the U.S. military. So it seems like Arctic control is a big piece.
And that's always been...
We already project power across the Arctic.
Yeah. And that's always been in the discussion on geopolitical
But from talks. Afar, though, right? Yeah. With missiles?
No, from all over Europe with bases, and on top of that, submarines, aircraft carriers, and all those.
So you think it's pointless?
Well, not pointless. I'm saying this is something the military-industrial complex, I'm sure, would love. This is something that many interest groups are very interested in, and the war hawks would love to extend the invisible empire. It's a great thing for them.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be so invisible.
Be more visible.
Well, it would be more visible.
It would be more visible for the time. In 100 years from now, we'd treat Greenland the same way we do Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and places like that.
Like how?
As if they're not our colonies.
They're just their own countries, but we more or less control them.
Yeah. They're protectorates.
Wait. So I just want to open up the dialogue here, because right now it's just kind of like, why is it wrong for them to be our colonies?
David?
Well, you pay the cost of it. For example, the first terror attack on the United States was Puerto Rican separatists.
Yeah, that's true.
They broke into the Capitol building with weapons, Tommy guns, and shot up Congress.
Dang.
Insurrectionists.
So now, would that happen in Greenland? Whatever. I don't know. But I'm just saying there's a cost to empire.
They only got 60,000. They don't got much to do with that. Like, what are they going to do?
They're a peaceful people. Yeah, they would never fight back.
Look at all those MAGA hats.
They're good. They're on our side.
So if you can accomplish the same amount of economic interdependence by free trade, I'm totally open to that. But I don't think that's what Trump's interested in.
To me, what it feels because to me, it's kind of like good or bad colony ship, like good or bad management over the colonies, where if you're just kind of doing this extraction game and the people don't feel like they have any self-sovereignty and you go against these, their home rules that have been granted to them and all these things, that's where people get a little bit in a tizzy and they're kind of like, oh, let's go shoot up the Capitol. You know, like that's when that happens. But if it turns into kind of just like, we're going to buy this territory from Denmark and we're going to allow them to exist pretty freely and have their own governance and things like that. Like it matters on, I think, how restrictive you may and how kind of like overbearing the empire is on them, right?
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine that we'd be less than Denmark is after the 2000s.
Yeah,
right. Where it's when I was looking at the Self-Governing Act, it's pretty broad. They have more rights than most United States do for rights.
Did you guys know that the U.S. has historically tried to acquire Greenland in the past?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I did not know that. No. Harry Truman, apparently, for those listeners that did not know that, like me, did make a proposal in 1946.
Do you think they just are looking for the Fortress of Solitude up there?
It is funny, too. And this is just like, I did just a little looking into just the basic, like, how this whole, like, the formal process of the Denmark stuff, where it literally was just like, well, the Vikings had it. And it just kind of sat there for a few hundred years. So like, let's just make this thing formal.
It's just covered in ice. Like, who cares? Yeah, just leave it.
Well, they do speak the same language.
Yeah, yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah, well, it's because Denmark,
similar, you know,
the Danes.
Yeah. Right. So like, there's also those phenomena.
Mm-hmm. So Kyle, I'm curious because you seem fairly pro acquisition of Greenland.
I'm neutral.
You seem.
I think it's funny.
Really,
you seem pro.
You seem very pro.
If there was to be a territorial expansion of the United States, something like this is way more, like, way better for me than like all of our adventurism that we're doing.
Sure.
Like this is such more of a peaceful acquisition for, like, for the security apparatus. Allegedly. And way more than
he didn't rule out using military force.
I kind of took that one as more for Panama.
That's negotiation.
That was more Panama that he was talking about. Yeah.
But it's also a negotiation tactic, right? You're using the threat.
Yeah. Right. Well, my question is then
I'm very open to the Greenland thing. I want to see numbers on how it would be beneficial. Like what is the strategic importance? What is the exactly? What is the natural resource contribution that would come with it? How would this help the energy sector, those types of things? I'm very open to that discussion and that dialogue.
Well, Grok says there are untapped oil and gas reserves in Greenland that would serve as obviously additional resources.
And I'd rather see if the Empire has to go get that, I'd rather see it done this way than a multi-decade military campaign in the Middle East.
Yeah, but that's a false choice. They could also just trade with them. They have a $3.24 billion economy. That is very small compared to the United States.
Which is probably
that's reacquiring Rhode Island.
But if it's a formal agreement,
what if we trade,
dude? That was just what I was gonna say.
That's probably kind of what the agreement turns into.
They
where
can
it's
have
just
Rhode
like,
Island.
Because it is. This is how mafias work, right? It's like we get you trade. We give you protection. That's how mafias work. And I'm just taking a very realist perspective of this is a mafia game.
Are you pro mafia?
Right, just mafia is a part of life.
Right? Sounds like you're pro mafia.
I'm realistic that mafias are part of life. And sometimes we put religions around them and we call them governments.
But should we empower them though? Should we empower them? Should we encourage its expansion and gobbling up of resources around the world?
You are literally saying it. You are literally talking about it. So what is your thoughts is the question.
I know. I think that this is just from a very realist perspective.
Sure.
That this seems like a logical move, and I'd like to know what more numbers are. I'm not taking some moral gripe over the claim of it. I think that there's kind of a moral argument that's being had from David over here. And I'm just saying, I think that there is just a real politique analysis to be had. Sure. And there's probably some game theory optimum way of it. I just want to see the numbers. And that's why I'm not just taking this moral, they should have their sovereignty or something like that. Doesn't matter to me.
Trump's just down at Mar-a-Lago playing Risk. He's like, I have to take Greenland. I only win when I take Greenland.
I'm just not treating it like I think that there's this kind of energy that is existing around it among libertarian space. That's just kind of it's, I don't know. It's looking at the middle. It's almost like equivocating a empire expansion in the Middle East with this. And I don't see it being at all the same thing. Right. That seems to be, that's the energy that I'm seeing towards it. I'm just looking at it.
At the same time, it is just empire expansion. It just is that, right. Yeah. Whether or not it's as convoluted and it costs as much money and bloodshed as the Middle East doesn't really mean that it's not just empire.
I'm sure when we conquer them, they'll welcome us, Joe. I don't know what you're talking about.
They will throw parades in the streets of
I want to be clear.
Wherever the
fucking
I'm fine with the empire expanding. Empires are going to expand. I'm okay with that. I'm not, it's this, not this, there's nonsensical expansion and then just good old fashioned expansion. I'm not taking some moral grit. That's what empires do, is they expand in such a way. And it's this thing's way closer. I can understand the strategic importance. I can understand the security importance. I can understand all that stuff. It's much harder for me to understand it when it's on the other side of the world.
So the people there do not want more development from American corporations, do they have a sovereign right as a people, because a country is a people,
that's where I would probably have gripes
to say no, we prefer our current sets of rules, we don't want to be governed by the EPA and the Halliburton, we want to do our own thing, and then Donald Trump buys them, and you're saying that is the good way to do it?
No, I'm saying if they had some sort of a vote or something like that, and it seemed very clear that the Greenland population thought that this was in their best interest, was to join the empire in such a way, then it's beneficial,
yeah,
both sides,
sure,
right?
Yeah,
that's why, but nobody's talking, we haven't even brought up that part of the argument.
Yeah,
I
actually tried to look up support in Greenland for this sort of thing, and there really isn't any public sentiment polls. America is tremendously popular there. Mm-hmm. Closer ties with America is popular. The current dominant party, really the division in parties in Greenland as I understood them, and this is a pretty quick summary, so I don't have a lot of depth here, so forgive me if I miss something up, is pretty much in independence from Denmark or not. And the people who are, you know, slowly unwinding independence from Denmark to be their own country, not to be America's vassal state, but to be their own country, is the majority party right now, not the fast remove from Denmark party. And those are usually paired with slow is usually more liberal and fast is usually more conservative.
That's interesting. I recall seeing statements from the, you know, the leader of Greenland. I'm not sure what they call the leader of Greenland these days, but and the prime minister of Denmark, I believe. Mm-hmm. Greenland was very anti acquisition because they want their independence and they want to, you know, have their own sovereignty.
Yeah.
And Denmark seemed to indicate like, well, like we'll hear them out.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting to me because they are really economically dependent on Denmark. I mean, like
Greenland
the block grants. Yeah, the block grants are substantial.
I imagine it's kind of like how the Scotland stuff went.
Well, I imagine they probably could see more subsidy and things of that nature from the United States, don't you think?
Yo, for sure. I mean, they would get Medicaid block grants. How great are those?
Depends on.
And road block grants, aren't those great? It's got costs and benefits. I think the realist perspective on saying, hey, is this the better way of expanding the empire? Totally, especially if you can get consent of the governed. I wonder to what degree, you know, there's any appetite for that, giving America's reputation when it comes down to brass tacks. And I'm very skeptical that it's going to go that way. Not without some serious psyops.
Is this going to be a multilateral kind of bidding war? You know, are Russia and China going to weigh in? Are they going to get to throw their hats in the ring, make a deal?
I think there will be psyoping that's going on. If anybody else tries to enter that, I don't think anybody else is winning the psyop game. And just from what I've seen too, is the general sentiment towards America. Like, I would venture to guess that the average Greenlander would be more happy and be more pro joining. Like they probably all want their independence, but they'd probably be more pro United States acquisition than Denmark staying. That's kind of what it seems like, just from what I just kind of like, that's some like AI searching and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so like whether or not that's true or not, I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't know if you can associate support with American economic ties with being a vassal state of America. Is the same concept. It's not the same.
I mean, they're probably enjoying more press right now than they've maybe ever gotten. Like, hey, yeah, we are up here.
We're famous
now. Hey, everybody.
Yeah. And like, there's going to be the dissidents, and that's going to be the thing is out of the 60,000 people, there's going to be people that are kind of on all sides of this. And what you're going to look at is you're going to see like, no, see, that person's really for it. And that'll be part of the psyop. So like, everybody's like, oh, the Greenlanders loves it. And then then you're going to have like the independent side that's just like, no. And then one side's going to be looking at that and it's like, oh, see, no, they hate it. And it's like, there's going to be psyop games that are going on, right?
Yeah. Has Andrew Tate weighed in on this subject?
I was going to skip over that story because we're running late.
The Brove Party is neutral, okay?
For those of you that didn't know, I guess we're not going to cover it very deeply. Andrew Tate has thrown his hat in the ring to run the UK.
He started his own political party.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just forwards you to andrewtate.com when you click on their links.
Where you can sign up for Hustler University or whatever.
Exactly.
It's all just a big publicity game, isn't it?
Britain restoring underlying values. That's bruv.
It's a good name for a political party.
It is a good name.
Because it's like calling it the dude party.
Yeah.
Like that's what, in America, it'd be like the dude party.
Yeah.
Right?
I like it.
I mean, it's everything I think you would expect. It's right-wing populism, like in a nutshell, is the entire platform of the pillars on that. So we'll see if the influencer game, because Andrew Tate is one of the most famous people in the world, just by the Google search trends.
And famous in the UK.
And he is a British citizen.
And a prominent bald as well.
Yeah.
Prominent bald.
Yeah, he's one of my people.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's got that. So, but it's all the standard stuff that you would see, harsh migration controls, kind of like anti-woke platitudes, promoting entrepreneurship, bringing boxing and wrestling back to schools.
that was my favorite part. I was like, they don't have boxing and wrestling in their schools? That's tragic. Boxing is like, that's like heritage sport. That's like, how do you not have that? It's like not having baseball in America.
Yeah, that's fair.
National Bitcoin Reserve, nuclear power independence, voting on the blockchain, creating a ministry of the future.
I don't like anything with ministry in it. It just sounds way too Orwellian.
All of their things are ministry.
I'm triggered.
Stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I already hate
just
it.
Just the American in you goes like,
ugh. No, that's just Orwell was British, so he's using their accent for things, right?
Well, I still don't like it.
But yeah, so he's formed a political party.
That's a fun story.
We'll see if that how serious that is. Apparently, people around him are saying it's pretty serious. I don't know. Can he leave Romania still?
Isn't he totally free?
A lot of it's been thrown out, but he keeps getting pulled back in all the time. So I don't know. I stopped following the case too heavily after it was just like so obviously got thrown out and it was kind of ridiculous.
Who's does he have a, well, I guess he doesn't really need a running mate, does he? He just started a party.
I don't know. His brother, Tristan.
That would track.
That's what I'm guessing.
Greta Thunberg, maybe.
But some people in the UK. Yeah.
Oh,
interesting. All right. So we want to dive a little bit more on the Cybertruck explosion. We had some interesting insights come out afterwards, specifically on the Sean Ryan show. So I'm going to try to do this quickly because we are running a little long. Sorry, Bennett. So he featured Sam's Shoemate, who runs a popular veterans Instagram account. Sam received a communication from someone claiming to be Matthew Levelsberger. Levelsberger? I never say it right.
Go with the first one. Levelsberger. I like the first one.
For at least a few days before the attack, with an email the day before. The same person also sent the same email to a few other popular veteran outlets, including Sean himself. So the letter, in short, to try to summarize it, although I didn't do a formal summaries, is basically he starts out and says, and this comes some key points, in case I do not make it to my decision point or to the Mexico border, I am sending this now. Please do not release this until January 1st and keep my identity private until then. First off, I'm not under duress or hostile control. And he does an authentication, which is my first car was a 2006 Black Ford Mustang V6 for verification. That has been post-verified.
It has been verified?
Yeah.
I saw Ian Carroll debunked it because he did own a Mustang, but it was not an 06 and it was not his first car. No.
Well, he's saying his first car was.
Well,
not that he owns his first car, but his first car was this.
Like,
he might own a Mustang now that he recently transported to the United States.
No, I know.
Homer put that out, but that's not what he's talking about for the authentication. You want something that's not currently verifiable by
driving past his house, right? Yeah. I get that, but what I'm saying is Ian Carroll put up this video. Ian Carroll, who, has done a lot of stuff. We've referenced him before.
Emily, pay attention.
He put up a video of internet sleuths who had looked up his vehicle ownership history, and mm-hmm. that was not the first car that he owned.
So the people who actually know him authenticate that.
Okay.
Yeah. That his first car.
I just wanted to inject that for the record so that maybe there's some speculation.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, totally. What we've been seeing with, quote, drones is the operational use of gravitic propulsion systems powered aircraft by most recently China and the East Coast, but throughout history, the U.S. Only we in China have this capability. Our OPCN location for this activity is in the box below. Now, he actually cites in the box below location coordinates that they were then able to track down to a base in Nevada.
It's Groom Lake, Area 51.
Okay.
Yeah.
China's been launching them from the Atlantic from submarines for years, but this activity recently picked up. As for now, it is just a show of force that they are using it similar to how they use the balloon for signals intelligence and ISR, which are also part of the integrated comm system. There are dozens of these balloons in the air at any given time. So what is because of the speed and strength of these unmanned aircraft? They are the most dangerous threat to national security that has ever existed. They basically have an unlimited payload capacity and can parkour over the White House if they wanted. It's checkmate. U.S. government needs to give the history of this, how we are employing it and weaponizing it, how China is employing them, and what way the forward is. China is poised to attack anywhere on the East Coast. And then he kind of gets into, he's been followed by Homeland or FBI. They're going to get him soon. It's unlikely going to let me cross into Mexico, but won't because they know I'm armed and have a massive V-bed, which is a explosive vehicle.
Right? Yeah.
Which they were very upset with that they had to explain what that was to the FBI.
Yeah. Vehicle-based improvised explosive.
Yeah. Which is like, I didn't know what that acronym meant, but like, I'm a civilian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's it. And then he gets into some crimes that he helped cover up in Afghanistan in 2019 by the admin, DOD, DEA, and CIA. And then he gets into these buildings struck.
Talks about who his superiors were and things like that.
Yeah.
Kind of major officers and stuff, which some of them are redacted, some of them aren't. Yeah. General Miller, part of it, stuff like that.
The end of it is, you need to elevate this in the media so we can avoid a world war because this is a mutually assured destruction situation. And then he gets into his name and his duty status and his public profile. Now, this was sent.
And some of the access he has.
Yeah. This was sent before anyone knew who he was.
This was sent to Shoemade, so the guy with the big Instagram account, on the 31st. Yeah. So this was the day before the explosion of the Cybertruck. In the podcast, though, they took a break, and Sean Ryan went and scraped their emails. And this guy from the same email had tried to reach out to Sean to get on the show several days before. Yeah.
Right.
And then it's one of those things where probably would notice if other major podcasters scrub their emails, they would probably notice the same thing. Yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Yeah.
So really what he's pointing to here are two main things that are of interest. The first being China is behind the drones and they're the most dangerous weapon in the world.
And what he's referring to here is like the New Jersey phenomena,
right,
and things like that that I've seen over.
And that China and the United States are the only ones with that type of technology right now too.
So he's pointing the finger at either the US or China for the drones. And then also these war crimes that occurred in Afghanistan, and he wants to blow the whistle on that, right? Those are kind of the two big things he wanted to talk about in this email.
Yeah.
Or on a podcast.
Yeah.
A lot of people on the internet have raised ideas that this email is fake. It does kind of seem to match in line with some of the stuff that the FBI has found at the Cybertruck. Like, and there's maybe more conspiracy to unravel there, but there's been a lot of dialogue online of people trying to disprove, even saying that Shoemate here wrote the email himself. There's also a lot of those claims on the internet right now.
Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense because he'd be providing false evidence to the FBI if he did indeed send it to the FBI.
Which they did.
Which would put him in jail.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I mean, there are a lot of people trying to call BS on this for any number of reasons, and most of them are, you know, former like special operators who have their own YouTube presences, who may be a little bit clout chasing or may have legitimate relationships with him or with people who served with him and may have information. I mean, obviously they can't like divulge a lot of that stuff, so they're kind of very vague about those relationships, but there have been like a number of people in that space who have kind of raised the red flag on this being false.
Yeah. Or at least that some of the things in it are inflated. For example, like the numbers of airstrikes that he was in charge of, that he claims that he was a part of. But the UN thing does check out. That's an actual, you know, I got it linked, UN report about a strike on a drug facility that killed lots of civilians that the UN came down the United States on.
Also, for those numbers being overinflated in his thing, his whole thing is that there was a cover-up.
Yes.
So, like, the idea that that he might be presenting like the real numbers is
probably also a thing. They're not even arguing that the numbers are off. They're saying like it's just not practical that many strikes could have happened given the authentication process in Afghanistan at the time he was there.
Yeah.
So,
there's a lot of theories now to be levied with this though too, is because there's a few things where we had. That Las Vegas press conference was going on while we were recording our last episode, and it led to us doing some dubious speculation about things. But it turns out he shot himself in the head with a Desert Eagle, 50 cal.
A big, big handgun.
Yeah. Big, big. So it's like, that's going to guarantee it. Mm-hmm. So there's one thing there where it's like, okay, it stops at the chances of it being like a miss and he's just sitting there gargling, you know, like it stops that.
Yeah.
That might be the reason for that. But there's also a lot of people speculating that it's not his body and that the Cybertruck rode up with the body and it's kind of like a fake Matthew Livesberg burger. And maybe he did that. And then he's still alive somewhere. There's that theory that's running around right now.
Right. I mean, the two, well, they're
and the DNA evidence such kind of may pertain towards that theory.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to bring up.
It
seems that at least what we're being told is that the DNA of the body in the vehicle does not match that of his son. Mm-hmm. which
I'm not sure about if he has a son. I'm aware of a daughter, but I couldn't find a son, so I wasn't ever able to track down where that's coming from.
I don't know.
Maybe it's not.
I think people are saying son. Some people are saying daughters.
Yeah, no, I know he has a daughter. Like that's been authenticated. You can find the pictures, but a son we're not sure about. He does have a prior marriage, but he just recently, 8 months ago, had a daughter.
Gotcha.
Which makes it doubly sad.
So then. Maybe it was daughter. I don't know specifically.
Child.
I saw son. Child.
I think it's just child and people are mixing up the gender.
But the piece about the firearm and shooting himself in the truck, we can't confirm yet if there is a bullet hole in the vehicle, right? No one's seen any evidence of that.
Yeah. You would guess that weapon would go through any amount of skull to get to the opposite side of the vehicle.
At very least, leave a mark in the vehicle if it
was.
We
also see no muzzle flash from the video. Unless it was done as he's pulling up or something, you know.
But again, the other piece is that Elon has come out and said that at least under normal operating circumstances, the Cybertruck, any Tesla, won't enter self-driving mode without an attentive adult in the front seat.
And I believe that requires eye contact.
It does. Right? I mean, I think it senses where you're looking and it makes sure that you're looking at the road, you're not reading a book or doing something else. So if you were incapacitated in some way, it couldn't just drive a body up.
Yeah, but I've seen people driving a Cybertruck while reading.
Yeah,
I mean maybe that's been updated.
Tesla, a Model X.
It could be that. I mean, where'd you see that? Like Instagram?
Seattle.
You actually saw it in person.
Yeah,
like ridden with people that have done crazy stuff.
They've just got sunglasses on with eyeballs that are pointing straight ahead all day.
No, because I saw this lady
in traffic sitting there just reading and it's driving down the highway.
I'm seeing people make a lot of claims about what. And I'm confused about some of these things because a lot of the claims that I'm seeing people making about like the eye contact needs to be made and all that stuff, I just don't think that's actually true. I'm seeing people make those claims because like you said, I think it's just that there has to be a body there.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, I mean, Elon was the one that came out and said it. So I guess I don't know to what, you know, degree you trust his opinion over people.
There is a question of like how technologically savvy he is because his whole background is an autonomous systems when
right.
it comes to
so you put
what
googly eyes
on
a corpse's head and then jump. Sorry, that's really disrespectful,
morbid.
But like, I mean, like, but you're like, I mean, is it possible to fool?
We would never do such things.
Well, his military background and what he's kind of going towards right now, as he's supposed to be retiring from his active duty stuff, and he's moving into, like, as Tim Kennedy put it, advanced military warfare. Is what he's moving into, and his LinkedIn profile is like autonomous systems, like that's a specialty. So it does make me consider autonomous vehicle.
Yeah,
he could have maybe done something to bypass. You know, who knows?
Yeah, there are a number of possibilities there, but still very nebulous proof around a lot of things. A lot of questions left unanswered.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, one of the other things about the DNA thing is that apparently, if you're special forces, the government has your DNA. So, like, why would they need to check it against some kid?
Fair.
You know, to know it's him. Now, that might be propaganda, right? It might be a psyop to it, right, to bolster the idea of a suicide.
Well, and that was because that was one of the points that they made on with Sean Ryan was they had, like, people coming to them talking about and seeming to want to enforce this idea of it's like he found out the kid wasn't his. Type of a thing.
Right.
So
and he was distraught.
And he was distraught and that type of stuff.
Now his wife claims that the split up that happened 6 days before was due to infidelity. And most reports are claiming that the infidelity was on his part, not hers. Yeah. So but that might be post hoc like
her saying
yeah,
that.
Her saying
right.
That, yeah. So who knows? That there's a lot there. The other part of that is there's this manifesto that also exists, where it's a political manifesto that they found on one of his two phones that was on location that they were able to get the data from.
And by on location, you mean in the vehicle that exploded and burned.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a pretty much a conservative thing. I mean, it's like peace in Ukraine, negotiating Ukraine. I think the key thing is this was not a terrorist attack. It was a wake-up call. Americans only pay attention to spectacles and violence. What better way to get my point across than a stunt with fireworks and explosives? Why did I personally do it now? I need to cleanse my mind of the brothers I've lost and relieve myself of the burden of the lives I took.
Yeah. Which a lot of this, too, kind of corroborates with the email, where the, because a lot of people are saying, well, like, they're like two different voices here, but one is a manifesto, which is supposed to be kind of this more verbose, like, thing.
Kind of a grandiose.
Yeah, grandiose yeah. thing, where the other is like a professional email, hey, can I come on your podcast? Right? Like,
right.
Yeah, different purpose.
Different purposes. Tone. So, like, the whole, they're different voices, that doesn't ring for me as anything that's relevant. Yeah, he talks about, like, DEI and
bringing masculinity back to the United States, like,
our leaders are idiots.
Our population's too fat, you know, things like that. Things like that, right? So the other part of that is that there's a second manifesto of sorts directed towards the veterans community specifically. Fellow servicemen, veterans, and all Americans, time to wake up. We're being led by weak and feckless leadership who need to only enrich themselves. Military vets need to move on DC starting now. Militias facilitate and augment this activity. Occupy every major road along federal buildings and camp and the campus of the Fed buildings by the hundreds of thousands. And he goes on. So and he says, kick out the Dems and cleanse the corruption in the government.
Now,
so,
this, like, could also be one of the things that's like PSYOP.
This has PSYOP written all over
it. Like, because this is 5 days before January 6th, right? So it could be. There is that angle that could be taken with this manifesto as well. And maybe that's something, maybe if we're talking about high-level chess or something, like, just dubious speculation here. Maybe that's something where it's like, oh, they're trying to divert away from the email, which is a much more measured, and just be like, hey, there's these war crimes, and also here's this classified stuff that I'm kind of talking about, and then we're going to talk about this and make it more of like a crazy Jan Sixer type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many different variables that are at play here.
Is how much do you trust the FBI?
Not that much.
Rough moment for that, you know? I mean, it's a rough time for trusting that institution.
Yeah. Well, if there was any other way that, you know, the manifesto was released in a way that could be actually traced to him having sent it, that would be different. But, oh, we found this on a phone in a vehicle that exploded full of gasoline and burned for, I don't know how long.
He didn't send it anywhere else.
A long time, and it didn't, it wasn't in anybody's inboxes. It wasn't prepared or sent or shared ahead of the event. Like,
he wasn't concerned it would burn.
Yeah, like, he didn't have it somewhere that would be accessible for after he, because, like, that's kind of a risk, is you might lose that there.
Right. Same thing with the, what was it, his driver's license that was still intact? It was, you know, charred a little on the corner, but still intact.
It was his military ID.
In the vehicle that burned.
Like, yeah, but that's one of those things about fires, is that they don't necessarily do everything you'd expect them to do, right? Yeah. It just depends on position, heat, where it's at.
But you have to think he would calculate that being a risk that they did get destroyed.
For the manifesto. Yeah. More so than
I don't think he gave this a shit about
unless,
the ID.
Unless, but put in the glove compartment, but I don't know. We don't know where it was found other than that it was found on the phones, which is strange, you know, to the degree that you trust the FBI to pull this and faithfully report it to the Las Vegas police, who then deliver it to the press.
And again, we have a record of the FBI and other law enforcement agencies withholding manifestos in convenient situations and releasing them in convenient situations.
That's,
and they're
also
releasing this one.
Yeah.
So why is that?
Also, wait, that city specifically.
True.
With that, the true words we cannot say on
YouTube. Yeah, the thing that still gets strangely censored on YouTube, that you major to event that happened
don't
in American history,
don't
the biggest
suspicious
of its kind.
If you want to know more about this, join us in the Discord and ask what we're talking about.
It's very strange.
Yeah,
very.
We can't cuss in the Discord, but we can tell you about this special event.
We can now. I fixed it.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
We had a bot turned on that made it so you couldn't use inappropriate language in the Discord. Oh. Very sorry, members. We are not pro-censorship.
Go fuck yourself.
We'll try to be more like Zuck.
That's right.
Less censorship.
We're moving back to a state of free and open expression in our Discord.
We'll put some community notes in there.
Come
yeah,
at
no,
me,
it's,
bro.
The whole thing is just, it's you know, there's also the dynamic, and I'm not saying this is true, but it's just a variable that could be thrown in there because I really like Sean Ryan. Sean Ryan is former CIA too.
Yes.
You know, like, and there's always that calculus that could be made.
But well, I don't see the incentive there, right? Because this isn't IC friendly. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make the intelligence community look good.
Controlled opposition type of idea though, right?
Well, in the long run, in some dimension, and there's some rhetoric that he uses, especially confusing the Al-Qaeda with Taliban as the primary enemy in Afghanistan, stuff like that, that does frustrate me. Mm-hmm. But those are also typical Republican right-wing military guy stuff, you know? Like,
I really like Sean Ryan. I'm just, that is the internet, but some people say that. I'm not saying.
I'm not even defending him. I'm just saying it's an insufficient argument on its own. And so we need to buttress that better.
I agree. I think there is room for healthy skepticism of some of these former IC individuals and professionals who have gone into the alternative media space and have made large brands and have large megaphones. I think there's an opportunity for the deep state and the intelligence community who is realizing that the legacy media is losing the impact that it once had on American, you know, ideology and culture and propaganda and all of those things to, you know, embed their own people inside of this sure. new emerging media sphere.
Sure.
So
on the other side
I think
of it, like,
a reason.
He's done too many things that are so critical of the FBI and the IC. Right. I mean, in fact, in the space that they discussed all of this stuff afterwards, it was like the same night as they released it. The entire thing was about how corrupt the FBI and DOD is. The DOD. They're claiming that they're kind of believing, oh, did the generals cover up this terrible crime in Afghanistan? They're all like, yeah, that totally happens all the time.
But
so like that's not means motive and material evidence, right? And the motive just doesn't make sense, right? And there's no I haven't found any clips of him saying something that makes me like, wow, that's really against the grain that would lead me to believe that what you're doing is trying to shape discourse on the benefit of the intelligence community.
I'm just saying that is the point. That also, is the point of controlled opposition. Is you
also
have
he was a CIA
stuff.
Contractor. Yeah. So he was more of an asset than an agent. So just keep that in mind.
And to be fair, I do like Sean Ryan's show also.
One of my favorite podcasts in the last year, become one of my favorite podcasters. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just saying like those are, it's always worth having those skeptical, like in order to look at all the variables accordingly. Like I'm not saying I know anything in this entire situation. It's just like, these are kind of all the variables at play. Right. And then we can dubiously speculate and we're like, oh, that variable doesn't matter. This variable does. And it's like, oh, now let's play around with this idea with these variables. Like that's just one of those variable things that you can shift in your mind for the case of making an actual hypothesis.
For sure. Very true.
Take a drink every time Kyle says dubiously speculate.
I like the word dubious.
To be fair though, and this is an interesting thing to me, Sean Ryan did kind of come about very recently. Yeah. He hasn't been doing this for a decade. He started his show October 30th of 2023.
He has just blasted into like that. That's one of the things that makes the variable relevant in my mind. It was like,
came out of
like,
nowhere
super fast. All of a sudden he's just like just out of nowhere, just kind of came out. And it's always been a thing for me. I was like, how do we do?
Yeah. Right. We got to have better guests. I mean, the interviews that he hosts are great. Yeah.
And
his guests are very
major
compelling.
Figures. Yeah. And he had major figures relatively early.
Yeah, for sure.
Mostly launching off of other famous vets, you know.
Yeah.
You guys should probably get a better CIA vet.
The CIA is not sending their best.
Who wants to post in Bozeman? He's like, fuck, I guess.
Now we're going to get Department of Ag relocated here. I'm like, all right, let's get somebody from Department of Ag out here. It's Thomas Massey.
Just writing checks, dude.
Yeah, but that's kind of, it's just a lot of strange variables that make it weird.
So really, I think the current categories are, veteran suicide, which has its own narratives and tragedy and things that are navigable by the narrative. Second is, a call for political activism, like suicide, like less so. I mean, obviously, it's a bit of both, but that part of that narrative is there. Terror attack is pretty much eliminated at this point. It's not really a viable narrative. No one really believes that. And the third one, which I think I keep going to this, is
still alive,
absconding, right? Faking your own death. And which each one of these all makes sense for both of those two categories simultaneously, both veteran suicide and like a political message and doing it so publicly, but all of that also serves the needs of trying to fake your own death. Cause now it's undeniable that he's dead because of the amount of hype that it is. If he just died mysteriously or just disappeared mysteriously, then there's a reason to do a manhunt and to look for him.
So why would he do that?
Because he found out his son wasn't his or his daughter, or he discovered his wife was cheating on him. Or
he felt like he needed to put things to the public and then he just needed to vanish.
Yeah.
Because there's also I could think of six different reasons in my mind why he would fake his own death.
But if you have access to government documents of gravitic propulsion and you didn't screenshot them or take a picture with your phone in the skiff or whatever environment that you have where you're dealing with those, or a schematic or something, then that it just makes it that seems like, I kind of think of it as more of a reason to talk on the Sean Ryan podcast than it is to actually do blow the whistle on something substantial.
Yeah, like that could be the other thing, is like the gravitic propulsion thing could be his sexy hook, because everything with the New Jersey drones and all that stuff, like, it's sexy at the time. Yeah. But what he wants to bring forward is the war crimes.
Yeah.
Like, it could be that. And the other stuff might even, like, that might be fake in the email. Like, maybe he doesn't even know, and he's just using that as a way to bring the war crimes forward.
Yeah.
Who knows, right? Yeah.
We don't know, but we will dubiously speculate, won't we, Kyle?
Just slinging about poppycock. That's what we're doing.
Well, hey, the poppycock from the last episode did prove to be
at least
congruent with the narrative that emerged after that. So,
And I also want to note too, like, a lot of this we're discussing very mechanically, scientifically, just kind of detached. And this is also a personal tragedy. This is also a terrible thing. You know, a daughter lost her father, or, you know, a woman lost her husband. I mean, this is a real thing. So, and veteran suicide is a huge problem in the country that is so, I mean, it's such a huge tragedy, all as a result of empire and the terrible situations we put vets in. In fact, in this, he specifically says, stop giving us wars with no point. Yeah. Like, let us fight real fights that actually protect the country.
Right.
I just hope, if anything, is somehow a little bit of that can bleed through this, that would be positive.
Well, and that is the thing right there, is, and that's where the big shift has happened with, particularly, I think older conservatives have had a hard time understanding this, but, like, because there's always this, like, we have to respect our veterans, we have to do this no matter what, and in the conservative mindset for a very long period of time, that means that we have to, like, go to war with everybody. But, like, the young veterans right now are generally of this mindset, like the Pete Hegseths of the world, the Sean Ryans of the world. Like, all these guys have spent the last two decades dealing with the war on terror and feeling like it's all been pointless. And now there's this shift happening where those people are starting to rise up and have prominent voices now. And it's like, yeah, like, if you want to respect the veterans, like, this is where the veterans' minds are right now, at large.
Yeah.
For sure.
Is this type of attitude.
Absolutely.
Not to just, like, all of a sudden endorse the manifesto or anything, but.
Kyle is very pro-manifesto.
He's pro-empire and manifesto, guys. We're good.
On that note,
if we're going to empire expand, let's just not do it in the Middle East. It's just, we'll at least have a point.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. What's oil in one country versus another?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, let's have a defined mission.
Get the oil. Take the poppies. Make the drugs. Get people hooked on the... No, anyway, all right. Well, should we wrap up before we get ourselves...
And then bob the plants according to the war crimes.
Do what?
It was drug facilities.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's what was getting
bombed. That's right. Well, you can't have a war on drugs without drugs.
I imagine. I haven't looked too deep into the details of all that, but, like, you're mentioning the poppy seeds. Like, this is the heroin production in Afghanistan, the drug facilities, all this stuff.
I thought the CIA was running
that. I don't know what we're yelling about!
for your information, Bennett, while we were in Afghanistan, they became like 97% of the, or something like that.
No, I know. I was trying to let Joe rap.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thanks, Bennett, for the cue.
Really great ending, Bennett. Appreciate it, buddy.
This has been an episode of Human Reaction. We appreciate you for watching. Please like, follow, subscribe everywhere you see the show. Become a member at humanreactionpod.com. Join the Discord. The link is in the description. For David Rand, Kyle Mack, Bennett on the buttons, I'm Joe Sheehan. We'll see you in the next one. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
a Greenland spring.
Do they have that there, or is it just always covered in ice? Sorry,
Arab spring. Greenland.
I know.
A Nordic spring. I don't know what do you want me to call it.